truth and freedom. Ignorance and slavery, truth and freedom. I've heard it said quite a few times, and possibly you have too, that ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. In addition to that, they say, what you don't know won't hurt you. I don't know if you believe that or not. DeLee's stepfather, Eldon Engle, was in the Navy in World War II. And after the bombs were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, some of the naval men were sent over there to help take care of certain things. And he was one of those that was asked to go. And in doing that, he was exposed to the radiation that was in the area. Now, he later married Coetta, DeLee's mother, and, well, no, that didn't sound good. DeLee's father and her mother divorced, and then she remarried the one Eldon Engle. Anyway, he was never able to have children. He was never able to produce children, shall we say. And he was an honest and honorable man, but he just wasn't able to have any children. He was ignorant of that, or it was a bliss, whatever, you don't know. He didn't know what to do to produce the children. Did it hurt him? Was he ignorant? Was it bliss? Whatever. Well, who knows? He wished that he had had children, but he always thought that because he was exposed to that radiation, that something had happened in his body and he was not able to have or produce children. So he didn't really know. And so, as we say, what you don't know won't hurt you. Well, that's not always true. Ignorance is not always bliss. My baby brother, who's now dead, been dead for 15, 20 years, he died of cancer, and he had, before he died, and knew he had cancer, he was given chemotherapy and radiation. And it burned his throat very badly, and he suffered tremendously because of that. When he allowed them to give him radiation, he didn't know that it would do what happened to him. He didn't know that. He was ignorant of that, but he did suffer. So what he didn't know really did hurt him. He was ignorant of certain things, and he suffered because he didn't know. I've heard this story a few times. Two young people got married, and they were totally ignorant of the sexual differences between men and women. I don't know if that's a surprise to you or not, but it does happen that they are totally ignorant of the differences in men and women. And because of that, their honeymoon night was an absolute nightmare, because they didn't know the difference. They were ignorant, shall we say. And what they didn't know hurt them very badly, because they didn't know. They didn't know how to treat that other human being, and didn't know that one was a crock pot and the other was a microwave. Go ahead, you can laugh. They didn't know that. And it was awful. What they didn't know did hurt them, and it hurt them badly for a while. Quite a few years ago, maybe 3-4 years after I graduated from Ambassador College, I'd had a friend in college, and he was ordained in the ministry, and he was pastoring a church, and DeLee and I stopped by to visit him and his wife. And while we were there, he was a minister taking care of two or three churches at that particular time. He said, "Vernon, I've got a question." And he was embarrassed to ask me, but he wanted to. He said, I won't tell you what he said, but he wanted to know what the trouble was in their marriage as far as a certain aspect of sexual relationship. Why he asked me, I don't know, but he did. He felt he had confidence in the answer I'd given. So I explained to him certain things. He saw it, and it made a big difference. He was ignorant. I wasn't. What was the difference? I had read the book, and he hadn't. He didn't know, and what he didn't know was giving him difficulty. I read the book, and we were taught, at least my class was taught at Ambassador College by Herbert Armstrong, from a very wonderful book about the sexual relationship and the understanding of the differences. And I had read that even before I went to college because some of the students sneaked it out and let me have it, and I read it. The title of the book was Sane Sex Life and Sane Sex Living by a Dr. H.W. Long in 1919. It was wonderfully written. It was very honorable. It was wholesome. It was informational. It was accurate about the differences between these crockpots and microwaves. And understanding that can make a big difference in a marriage and keep you from having a disastrous marriage. He didn't know that. I don't know why he didn't. He was an intelligent man. He went on to have a huge degree in psychology and other things. But he didn't know. So ignorance is not bliss. And what you don't know can hurt you sometimes very, very badly. In line with all of this, can you think of a hallmark statement by Jesus Christ, no less than our Savior and older brother, the King of Kings? Can you think of a hallmark statement of Jesus, which is a major belief of the Church of God? I don't hear any brains moving there. Okay. So over in Cambridge, a man said, yeah, and he held up and he had the answer. Let's go to John 8, and you'll probably pick it up pretty soon. John 8, we'll start in verse 31. A statement made by Jesus, which when he made the statement, those who heard what he said were offended at what he said. John 8 and verse 31. No, verse 32, I'm sorry. 32, Jesus said to someone that he was talking to, he said, well, I'm in John 6, no wonder it didn't look right. John 8, John chapter 8 and verse 31. Jesus was talking to a group of individuals, and he said to the Jews who believed him, or they believed in what he said. So up until this point, they had believed what he said, and he said, if you abide in my word, and of course God's word tells us what God's ways are, if you abide, which means to stay or to live by, if you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed. A bond there. Then verse 32, and if you abide in the word, you'll understand, and you will know the truth. When you read and study God's word, it will tell you the truth. God's not going to lie to us. He's not going to tease us. He will tell us the truth. So if we abide in what he said, we are not only his students, but we're learners, soon to be brothers and sisters, and you shall know the truth, and studying the Bible will make a freak out of you. No, if you study the Bible, you will know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. As I said, ignorance and slavery, truth and freedom. Well, this offended the Jews. I don't know if you've ever been offended when you read the Bible, but this group of people were absolutely offended at what Jesus Christ said. They said, wait a minute, we're Abraham's descendants or children. We've never been in bondage to anyone. So how can you say you will be made free? Well, I guess you could say it was a decent question. But they were offended, and he gave an answer in verse 34. It doesn't sound like an answer, but it was. He said, most assuredly, I'm telling you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. We've often said that sin is the missing of the mark. Now, if you miss the mark, you didn't do it right. If you are missing the mark or marks, then you're not doing it accurately. And when it comes to life, if you're not following the rules of life accurately, then you are enslaved to a certain degree. Of course, the opposite of truth is ignorance. And there are those who have no knowledge and those who have the true knowledge. The reason they have difficulties, they have knowledge and still have difficulties, is that they're following incorrect knowledge. And if you're following incorrect knowledge, you will always, always get incorrect results. Never fails. How many times have we excused ourselves, I include myself, by saying, well, I didn't know. And that's supposed to wipe out all the difficulties with the problems that we have because of that or the wrong things we did. Well, I didn't know. Well, that means then we were ignorant. And it also means that we didn't have the proper knowledge. And it also means that we were not following proper knowledge. That begs the question then, when we say, well, I didn't know, and you did things, and there were bad results. Does ignorance of a law exempt us from suffering the penalty of having broken the law? I didn't know, but I broke the law. Then am I exempt from any suffering that would come from that? I think you know the answer. No, we're not exempt. I heard a story one time about some field workers in the third world country. It was humorous. I laughed and laughed when I first heard of it. It's still funny, but it's not funny because it was human beings involved, and it could have been absolutely disastrous to them. I don't know how many it was, but quite a few field workers. And at the end of the day, and this was back in the early 1900s, at the end of the day, they got into a flatbed truck to ride home, and they weren't accustomed to riding in flatbed trucks. In fact, they probably didn't know what a truck was. The owner put them on a flatbed truck to go out in the morning, come home at night. And they're probably at a time when automobiles were new and they didn't have much knowledge of it. Well, it came time that they would get off the truck. They were in a hurry to get off and get home, so they didn't wait for the truck to stop. They just jumped off. And it was going a reasonable rate of speed, and they just went flying. Why? Because they were stupid? No, they weren't stupid, but they were ignorant. They had never learned the truth about the law of inertia. They didn't know that. They didn't know if they stepped off while the truck was going, they'd keep going. So they just jumped off. Whatever is in motion will remain in motion until slowed up by something. They were lucky. They could have killed themselves because of what they didn't know. They were ignorant. The road was soft, so they fell into that and they didn't kill themselves. But was ignorance bliss? Well, it could have cost them their lives, all of them. They could have died by what they did because they were ignorant and they just dived off the truck. Let me ask you some questions that go along that same line. And we're all aware of this. If a year-old child touches a red-hot stove, the child doesn't understand that the fire or heat could hurt him badly. He touches a red-hot stove with his hand. Will he suffer? Now, he's ignorant of it. He's not malicious. He's not trying to hurt anybody. He's not trying to dishonor his parents. He just is ignorant about heat, fire, and so he touches it. Will he suffer? Yes, he will suffer. It could hurt his hand. It could hurt his body. It might ruin his life in certain ways, especially if it hurt his face. Another one, and this one is kind of silly, but I don't know if anyone's done it, but it is possible. If a child drinks a cup full of battery acid, he doesn't know what it is, but he found it and he drank it. He was ignorant. He didn't know what it was. He just drank it. Will that child suffer? Well, you and I know that he will. He's ignorant. He's sincere. He's honest. He's a sweet child. But he will suffer because he did something that was outside the law of that particular point. Another one that you may have done yourself. I don't know if I've done it, but we didn't have electricity the first few years when I was that young. But if a child puts a pin into a live electrical outlet socket, will he suffer? Yes, he will. Sweet little kid. Sweet as can be. He didn't know what was going to happen if he stuck that in there. He just saw the hole and he poked it in there. He will suffer. We all understand that we all start life as ignorant, that is, lacking in knowledge. We have to grow in the knowledge and we have to learn. We have to learn. What if we never learn on certain things and we remain ignorant, that is, lacking in knowledge? Can we make it good and right in life being ignorant all our life? I don't think so. If we are ignorant and things cause hurt, will we suffer? Well, let's notice what Paul said about this to get into the Bible again in Romans chapter 6 and verse 12. As I said, ignorance and slavery, truth and freedom. Romans 6, and we'll start in verse 12. Romans 6 and verse 12 says, and he is speaking to people in Rome who understood iniquity, understood murder, understood a lot of things in that Roman territory and in Rome itself. Therefore, do not allow sin to rule in your physical body. Why not? What's wrong with allowing sin to rule in our physical body? And he said, so that you shouldn't allow it, because so that you should obey it in its lusts. And lust sometimes gets us into trouble. Do not present your members, that is the body, as instruments of unrighteousness or wrongness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead. And if you touched a hot stove, it might be that case for sure. Your members as instruments of righteousness to God. For sin, and what is sin? It's the breaking of good laws, the Ten Commandments, going contrary to the goodness of law. And even though we're ignorant, we still suffer the consequences. He said, don't allow yourselves to fall into that situation. Sin shall not have dominion over you, for you're not under law, but you're under grace. And a lot of people use that to prove that you don't have to live by the law, because Jesus died to pay for the penalties, and so you don't need to worry about that. Verse 16 is a very important point of life. And I would assume from what Paul said that he was assuming that some of those in Rome didn't understand this principle. He said, Don't you know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves? You will be enslaved to that. So, don't you understand that, he said. Well, apparently he had reason to believe that maybe they didn't understand that, and he was trying to explain it to them. You are that one's slaves whom you obey. Now, obey means to follow the guidelines. And there are a lot of people who live their whole life living outside the rules, outside the laws. And they get away with it, they think. But like the youth on the truck, as soon as they dive off the truck, they didn't realize that law was going to kick them in the butt, if I can put it that way. And there are a lot who may live outside the laws of God, and they don't realize the consequences until they've actually done it, and they see the consequences they have to take in life. Then he said in verse 17, but God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart. And there's a major key point, verse, word. You have obeyed from the heart. In Isaiah, I've forgotten the chapter, I've mentioned it quite a few times, that in the millennium, the Gentiles will buy into God's ways of life, and they will say, we're going to go to Jerusalem, we're going to find out what they're doing, and we're going to live the way they're living because that looks good to us and we'd like to have that. They buy into it. That's what we call obeying from the heart. Nobody is forcing us. We see the goodness of it. And because, you know, we may be dumb, but we don't want to be ignorant. That if it's going to profit us, we'd like to be in on that. So, from the heart, the goodness of God's ways. I mentioned to that 84-year-old woman when she was talking, I said, we don't force people to come to United Church of God. Neither do we try to keep them from attending the Church of God. That's a decision they must make themselves, and they must buy into that. All we will do is explain what we teach, and it's up to you then to look at the truths that we put forth. So he said, God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine or belief or rules. Doctrine is just a rule that we live by. That form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And then it says, and having been set free from sin or the wrong rules, you became slaves of doing it right. You never thought about being in slavery by doing it right. Yeah, we are enslaved to the goodness of life. And then Paul said, I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your life or body or flesh. In other words, they didn't fully grasp it because they were human. So, Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Well, what if we don't know that? We don't understand that principle. We don't follow that principle. Will we suffer the consequences? I think you know that we will. Let's look at Leviticus 5, verse 17, where Moses was explaining a certain principle to the Israelites who weren't up to, they didn't understand all of the laws or guidelines or statutes that were given to them. They heard them, but they didn't understand it. So, in Leviticus 5 and verse 17, a point is made about this being ignorant or being forgiven for your ignorance. Leviticus 5, and verse 17. If a person sins, and of course that means break the laws of God, specifically the Ten Commandments, but any of the major laws of God, if a person sins and commits any of these things which are forbidden, like don't eat unclean foods, don't do certain things as far as the sexual aspect of life is concerned, don't take advantage of people who you could and hurt them, whatever it was, if you sin, break the laws, live outside the rules, and you commit any of these things that are forbidden, though he, the person who does this, though he does not know it, that he's doing that, yet he is guilty and shall bear his iniquity. Well, he could say, I honestly didn't know that. So did he suffer? Well, apparently he did, because he had to be forgiven for what he had done. And it says in verse 18, he'll bring to the priest a ram without blemish. That was in the days of the animal sacrifices. A ram without blemish from the flock, with your valuation, as a trespass offering. And it says the priest shall make an atonement for him regarding his ignorance, in which he erred and didn't know it. And then it says it'll be forgiven. Once he gives that trespass offering and shows that he is sincere, he may be ignorant, but he is sincere, then God would forgive him. Interesting point here. When you think of forgiven, what does that bring to mind? Well, forgiveness means that the law has been broken and the penalty had to be forgiven for having broken that law. Forgiven means that he had been suffering the penalty and it was blotted out for him. So Jesus said this very famous statement, and it is one that we do believe in the Church of God, that you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. There are a lot of people today, famous people, wealthy people, intelligent people, who are moving God out of the picture. And that they are making the rules, and they will live by the rules. They don't need the laws. They're going to have to find the hard way that that's not exactly true, and life is not that way. Well, some will say, wait a minute, you've been talking about the rules here and the law. I thought that there was such a thing as mercy. Whatever happened to mercy? Well, that's an interesting topic, because you'll find in Proverbs 3, the first four verses, it gives the answer as to what happened to mercy. Proverbs 3, the first four verses, it says this, "My son," now notice, even though God knows that we have disobeyed him and didn't follow his ways and did things that were sinful, he didn't say, "Okay, knothead, wake up." He said, "My son," or "my dear son, don't forget my law." Why? Because when we live outside the law, there will be consequences we'll have to deal with. "Let your heart keep my commandments." Again, it says the heart. Something that we bought into. "Let your heart keep my commands, for length of days, long life, and peace they will add to you." And then it says, and notice, it puts these two words together, "Let not mercy and truth forsake you." Yes, there is such a thing as mercy, but it's tied in with truth. It's put together with truth. If we've been breaking the things that are true, then we need mercy. And God will give it to us. It said, "Bind them around your neck." You don't have to raise your hand today, but how many of you are wearing a chain around your neck today, and you wore it because it's beautiful and it's expensive? That shows that we have class, we have money, and we love. This certainly, it has something to do with who we are, that we wear this golden necklace. Well, God likens mercy and truth as this golden necklace around our neck. Write them on the tablets of your heart. Now we have, in the computer world today, tablets where you can just type in and you can see everything. It ought to be in our life. You know, we used to be taught a lot regularly to take notes at church. Some do, some don't. So they did. They took notes and they closed the notebook, took it home, put it somewhere that they never found it again. And the notes weren't all that good. But here it says, the tablet of your heart. The notes are in our heart. We don't have to think about where they are. It's a part of our mindset. And so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. Mercy and truth, they are linked together. Let's look once again in John 8 and verse 11. This is the story of the woman who was caught, taken, as it said, in the act. And there were a lot of them who wanted to crucify her. John 8. And we'll read verse 11. You know the word before I go because it's a famous one. John 8 and verse 11 says, "Go and sin no more." As if that's a loud, authoritative voice. You know the story is a woman was a sinner. And she was caught, and the Jews wanted to get rid of her and condemn her. And Jesus said, well, he who has never sinned or without sin, you throw the first stone. And they all left. So in verse 10, after writing something in the soil, Jesus looked up. And the woman was still there. She didn't leave. He said, "Where are your accusers? Has no one condemned you?" And she said, "No." Now, he didn't say, "Has anyone proven where you were wrong? Did they find your sin?" But they just didn't condemn her because they were guilty themselves. "No one, Lord." And he said, "Well, I don't condemn you either." Jesus didn't come to condemn the world. He came to save the world by forgiving them of the things they'd done was wrong, if they would accept it. "Neither do I condemn you." And then he said, "But though I don't condemn you, I will say this. Don't do it anymore." That's what "go and sin no more" means. Don't do that anymore. You've been sinning that way. Stop it. You're ruining your life and others. Well, she was grateful for that. What he said was, when he said, "Go and sin no more," you've been living outside the law, the rules, the guidelines. What you need to do is use correct knowledge from now on to guide your life. And God will extend mercy so that we can. A lot of the times you'll find in the Bible that God, rather than condemning us or haranguing us, urges us to acquire correct knowledge, so that we won't have to suffer because of what we're doing. But to acquire that correct knowledge so as to eradicate our ignorance. You'll find this in Proverbs 4, verse 5. Proverbs 4 and verse 5, it says, and wisdom is talking about decisions, it says this. Proverbs 4 and verse 5. Get wisdom. Now, he didn't say get out of here. He said learn the proper rules. Learn how to make good choices. Understand what you're doing. Don't be ignorant. Learn the rules. Live by the rules. Have correct knowledge and understanding. And he said, don't forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Don't forsake her. She'll preserve you. Love her and she'll keep you. So God was urging us to use proper knowledge and to acquire correct knowledge. That has to do with decisions. You can't make good choices if you have bad knowledge. But we all like this quick fix. Don't give me any harangue. Don't tell me about religion. Just fix it for me. So, ignorance is not bliss. Never has been, never will be. But how many of us are still ignorant and thinking that we are in bliss? Ignorance is not bliss. Not at all. It's just ignorance. Let me give you some aspects of life here and think about that. How that ignorance continues the problem we have and the bliss that we think we have, and we finally learn and improve. The Bible says that money is the root of all evil, but it is actually, it answers all things. Quite a few people in the Church of God who understand God's views of this are having financial difficulties. Quite often, it is that they do not understand, nor are they following financial management guidelines. The other day, I was visiting with a family, and they were having financial troubles, and the man was the culprit. He knew he was the culprit, and so after we'd had a good visit, I said, do you know how to manage money? Do you know how to manage money? And he said, no, I don't. No, I don't. I said, why not? You can learn, can't you? No, I can't. I said, yes, you can. You can learn how to manage your money. So sometimes in the Church of God, people say, why am I having all these financial problems? I love God. I go to church. I try to do what's right, but I'm having all these financial problems. As many say, at the end of the month, I have very little money and a lot of payments to make. Let's look in Proverbs 21, verse 20. And you will find the answer to this. Why people do not know how to manage money, or the result of not using financial management principles. Proverbs 21 and verse 20 says, there is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise. In other words, in that person's house, there's a lot that's good. Treasure, oil, but a foolish person squanders it. A better translation of that is they go from paycheck to paycheck. They're living their life paycheck to paycheck, and they never have enough money. They just can't seem to manage it. Why? They don't really know. Another one that gives us trouble is food. You say, it gives us trouble? No, I love to eat it. Well, that's part of the problem there. It's not all of it. I don't think it's any secret that many in the Church of God have health problems. And for whatever reason, they don't seem to understand why. They say, I love God, I keep the Sabbath, I do everything that I know to be right, but I'm sick. I'm sick. And I don't have the money to go to the hospital for to take care of it. Talia and I were talking the other day, and she mentioned it in reading that, do you realize what the new nicotine is? Sugar. It is the new nicotine that is causing tremendous damage to the health of many, many, many people. Sweets. We love sweets. I'm not saying it is wrong to eat sweets, but if it is more than your body can handle, then you can go to the Sabbath the rest of your life, and it still will be a problem in your life, not the keeping of the Sabbath, but the health. Because what we put in our body affects our body one way or the other. And if it is, and if the body cannot handle it properly, there will be results. And you think, well, I'm honest, I'm honorable, I love my wife, I love my children, I try to take care of them, I tithe, I do all these things, but I'm sick. Yep. Outside the rules, and we don't even realize it. Marriage. I don't mean to harangue about divorce and remarriage, but divorce and remarriage is, in a sense, rampant in United Church of God, more than you would realize. And divorce is always a two-party thing. I love God. I'm trying to do what's right. Why do I have marital problems? Well, maybe you don't know the difference between a crock pot and a microwave either. I don't know. But there are rules to marriage. And if we don't follow them, there are things that a man should do, things a woman should do. And if we don't follow them, then we are lacking in knowledge, we are lacking in the correct information, and we will suffer the consequences of that. Always. Because there are living laws. Some people have a paranoia. They think, nobody seems to like me. They don't like me. I'm a Christian, but they don't like me. Why don't they like you? Maybe you're not likable. Maybe we're not likable. Who knows what? Others have said, why can't I get a better job? I tithe. I'm trying to do what's right, but I can never get a really good job, a better job. There is a proverb that talks about the diligent will have sufficient. I heard it said some time ago. I blinked a few times when I first read it, and I guess I still do, and I certainly haven't lived by this in some, but not this far. It said, if you read an hour a day in your chosen field, whatever your chosen field is, if you read it an hour a day, in 3 years you'll be at the top of the class. Because you studied and read and understood and you applied that knowledge to your career. In 5 years, you will be a world celebrity in one sense because of focusing on learning what makes that job tick. We have some sitting among us today who have learned that and they're doing very well. Others may not have learned it, and they can't understand why. What's the difference? We both go to church, same church. I pray and study. They're doing well. I'm not. Why? Maybe living outside the rules of making a living. Some people say, when trying to explain why they don't have a better job or a better income, I don't have the time. I don't have the time. Okay, well, that's true. They probably don't, but why don't they have the time? How much time do they spend watching TV? An hour a day? 2 hours a day? I know that's primarily talking about adults, but as far as young people, even just getting out of high school, text messaging is becoming a huge thing in youth's lives today. How much time do they spend in texting messages to other people that really don't add to life, other than how you doing, fine, whatever? Maybe they're using their time for things that don't build their life. They're busy, 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 but it's not building their life. Oh, it's friendship, yes, and that's fine. It has been said that many of the truly successful people had a thirst for learning. You know, some of us men have pushed the lawnmower in our backyard in the summer, 80, 85, 90 degrees, and we spent an hour cleaning the backyard. And when we came in, we were starving for liquid, and we had a beer. And it was so sweet to have that beer when you were absolutely thirsty. Well, that's the way it is with life. You work hard, and you have a thirst for learning. You fulfill that thirst, and you reap the goodness of those laws. Quite often, when they didn't have the answer, they looked for it. And that brings up another principle. It's not in Proverbs, but you might say it is a proverb, in the book of Job, chapter 29. Job 29 and verse 16. Job 29:16. Well, let's read in verse 15, because it talks about Job was a good man, and he did a lot of good things for people. He said, "I was eyes to the blind." Now, the blind sometimes need help. Well, watch that step. Don't trip over it. He said, "I was the eyes to the blind. I was a feet to the lame. Help them along. I was a father to the poor." And God talks an awful lot about helping the poor people who, for whatever reason, are not able to help them, and maybe we could help them. Then notice the latter part of verse 16. It says, "I searched out the case," or I think the old King James language said "cause." "I searched out the cause that I did not know," or better put, "the cause which I didn't know, I searched out." We know there's a cause. What's causing this? Did we search it? People talk a lot today about researching, and researching is good. But do we research what's causing our problem? "I searched out the case that I didn't know." That's a very important point of life. This, you may seem, this doesn't have application to what you're talking about, but it does. Let's go to Isaiah 44, beginning in verse 9. "As I get older and as I have a good life and the knowledge of God's truth, I see people that are suffering in the church, mostly out of the church, in various nations, about the 200 girls that were stolen and who knows where they're slaves now. And we have no idea how many more are that we don't even know about. It's easy to feel sorry for those human beings who are made in God's image. Their circumstances are pitiful, but they're made in God's image. They don't know they are, but they are. Their life is in such a need of true guidelines. You think, well, don't they know? No, they don't. Some don't even have a clue as to why the life's not going the way it ought to go. So let's look in Isaiah 44. You've been there waiting for me, so let's go to Isaiah 44. And it's talking about an individual who's building a god. And we read about that. And we all have gods in certain ways before we know the true God. Isaiah 44 and verse 9 says, those who make an image, all of them are useless or futile. An image meaning a piece of wood made into the image of a god. Their precious things shall not profit. They are their own witnesses. They neither see nor know, and that they should be ashamed. Who would form a god or mold an image that profits nothing? We think he'd be an idiot for doing that. But many people have done that over the years, and those in other nations who did it. You just look in your dictionary and you'll see all the different gods of the ages that people made. And they don't profit anything because they can't walk, they can't talk, they can't help you. They're just sitting there where you put them. He said, surely all his companions would be ashamed. And the workmen, they're mere men. Let them be gathered together, stand up. They shall not fear, they shall be ashamed. And then it talks about a specific one. I used to watch my father and the blacksmith. He was a strong man. And if you watched very many Westerns, they went into the where the blacksmith was to put shoes on their horses or make a wagon tongue or whatever. The blacksmith with the tongs works one in the coals, fashions it with hammers, works it with the strength of his arms, and they did have big arms. Even so, he's hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water and is faint. And then it talks about marking certain things and building this god. Verse 14, he cuts down cedars. And he plants a pine, and rain nourishes it. Then it'll be for a man to burn, for he will take some of it and warm himself. Yes, he kindles it and bakes bread. Same piece of wood, he bakes bread with it, he warms himself. And then the latter part of verse 15 says, indeed, he makes a god and worships it. He makes it in a carved image and falls down to it. Burns half of it in the fire. With the other half, he eats food. He roasts and satisfies. He warms himself and says, ah, I'm warm. I've seen the fire. And the rest of it, he makes it into a god, his carved image. He falls down before it, worships it, prays to it, and says, deliver me. You're my God. Well, we laugh at that, but people did that. Why? Because they were ignorant. They didn't know who God was, nor how to make a god. It said in verse 18, they don't understand. And their hearts, so that they cannot understand, no one considers in his heart or knowledge. Look, I've burned half of this in the fire, yet I've baked bread on the coals, I've roasted meat and eaten it, and shall I make the rest of it an abomination? Sometimes we come to ourselves and realize what we're doing. Ignorance is a curse. Always has been, always will be. What you don't know could cost you your life. We, I say, not just you. God is not ignorant. We're made in his image, and we shouldn't be ignorant either, but we do allow it. We have a mind which has almost limitless possibilities. One thing I've noticed in the last few years is that minorities who are moving into the USA or who've been here and been disadvantaged, they are now learning about education. And they're learning to gain knowledge, and they're learning to get degrees so that they can rise up, properly so, and have a good life, financially speaking, so to speak. They've learned that. Before they were ignorant, now they're knowledgeable, at least in this aspect. Ignorance is a curse. What you don't know can kill you sometimes. We read this quite often, but let's read it one more time in 1 Timothy 4. 1 Timothy 4, verse 13. Paul, an older man who had lots of knowledge, he had learned a lot. He knew what the good, the bad, and the ugly was. He'd been through it all, and now he was trying to tell a young man how to go about life in teaching and helping, and for his own life too. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 13 says, "Till I come." So Paul had left him in a particular place, and he said, "I'll come back and help you. So till I come, give attendance to watching TV." They didn't have TV, but whatever they had that distracted them. "Give attendance to reading." Maybe reading that hour a day, and in 3 years you will be. "Give attendance to reading, to exhorting, and to doctrine." Doctrine meaning the physical laws of life, the true laws of life that make for a good life. And it says, "Don't neglect the gift that is in you, God's Holy Spirit." Give attendance to, meaning focus on it. And then the other one, which is in conjunction, this is in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15. He said to Timothy again, "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God." Not humans necessarily, though we do need to be approved by them. Be foolish of us to tell our boss, "Look, I don't have to listen to you. Get out of my life." He says, "Fine, you're fired." "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker that doesn't need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." And don't spend a lot of time on profane and idle babblings. In other words, study to show you're approved, that it's you understand life and understand what the rules are. Studying the Bible is a wonderful blessing. It gives us basic truths, the foundation of life. It gives us basic truths on all basic human subjects. What to eat, what not to eat, how to use our money, how to live with the opposite sex and have an enjoyable life, how to rear our children. Everything that we need in life, God gives us basic truths and basic understanding of these basic human subjects. Jesus put it all together in a very short, terse statement when he said, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." So it is true that what you don't know may hurt you. And it is also true that ignorance is not bliss. You must know the truth, and that will ultimately set us free.